This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
87 minutes after 10 o'clock, you're still listening to Power Talk with me, Aldrin St-Pierre. So between now until the top of the hour, the focus of the conversation will be on the oversight role supposed to be played by Parliament and parliamentarians. But we can take the conversation just a step further and also speak about provincial legislatures and members of provincial legislatures, members of councils, and the roles that they are supposed to play in terms of oversight. Do you think that Parliament, do you think that the legislatures as well as councils have failed in that constitutional duty to conduct oversight and the oversight duties around holding the executive accountable, and also the new rules? And for me, it's more about the new rules that are also coming in. Who is checking these new rules? Who are also checking whether the rights of ordinary citizens aren't being abused? As I've indicated, there is a constitutional court application right now to try and stop the Minister of Defence as well as the Minister of Police, to get them to stop the police as well as the army from brutalising community members. You may have seen that, especially the first 2-3 weeks into COVID-19, how many people were being attacked by police officers, by SANDF members as well, and you may have seen those videos as well. So 0861-987-000, you can tweet at Aldrin St-Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. We'll be in conversation with Mkhuleko Hlengwa, the SCOPA chairperson, Lichisa Tsenodi, the deputy speaker of the National Assembly, as well as Siseko Khumalo, who's the editor of a Journal of Decolonizing Disciplines. Let me start off with you, Siseko. Good morning and welcome. Do you believe, or do you think from your vantage point and where you're from, that there has been a lapse in that oversight role that's supposed to be played by the legislatures?
Good morning and thank you, Aldrin, for having me on the show. So to answer that question, I'll just point us to the public documentation that has been published by Parliament. The last joint joint program committee program that was set out was agreed upon on the 28th of November for the first term of 2020, right? And to this point in time, if you go onto the parliamentary website, the National Assembly's website for that matter, there is no particular schedule for the second term. And of course, one of the defense or one of the sort of objections to that particular claim that I'm certain the Deputy Speaker will raise is the fact that actually, you know, there was the constituency work that was being done by MPs. And for me, the question is, number one, did we as South African citizens have access to our MPs during this constituency work period? No, we didn't, because of the lockdown period. And number two, in many respects, does Parliament have in place mechanisms and checks and balances such that if MPs were able to access the citizenry, they can then be able to feed that information into the National Assembly and subsequently be able to report to the different portfolio committees. And on another matter, there are three particular joint standing committees that I tried to get in touch with yesterday to try and find out whether they would continue to do their work now that the constituency work period is over. This was the Joint Standing Committee on Defence, and the committee secretary did not get back to me on that. The Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, who I did get in touch with the committee secretary, who did mention that Standing Committee on Intelligence will not resume its work as parliamentary portfolio committees are only going to be focusing on those that are inherently linked to the COVID-19 issue, as well as the Constitutional Review Committee, which said that they would continue their work. But when exactly, I'm not too certain about that. But in terms of these three particular joint standing committees that I particularly see as necessary, it's because of the role the role that they play in terms of checking and balancing the state and the mechanisms, especially defense, intelligence, and constitutional review. While I understand health and all the other sort of joint committees that will necessarily do their work with relation to COVID-19, I'm thinking about the longer project in terms of the democratic project in this country, and I'm not certain that we have those checks and balances fairly in place just as yet.
Okay, let's get the Deputy Speaker to respond to that. Good morning, and Dadilichisa Tonodin, welcome.
Good morning, and good morning to your listeners. This period is unprecedented. it is extraordinary. And therefore, the way we work is changing. So it is evolving. And the speed with which we are doing it could be better. Of course, it's true. But we have met as a presiding officer, granted permission, and explained that because of the nature of what we are confronted with, we are going to be working digitally. Committee chairpersons, when I spoke first, I said, chairpersons, of course, must assess their work programs and then meet virtually, of course, so that they can interact among themselves to assess what nature of project and programs they should undertake relevant to the current environment. When things like those that you started with in your background information about police and soldiers doing A and B, oversight means that the president spoke. He gave them a pep talk and instructed them to behave in a manner that is consistent with the constitution. The deputy minister, Thabang Makweta, wrote publicly explaining why that is important, why it is objectionable for some of those members to behave the manner in which they did. And the joint standing, the Joint Committee on Defense is one of those that we have approved to meet, to be able to assess things like those and ensure that action is taken against wrongdoing so that citizens are assured that the message of the president goes to every one of those police men and women that they must behave appropriately. In the majority of instances, that is so. But generally, yes, we have, of course, the communication will break down.
Yeah.
As we proceed to work here. And for example, the gentleman who just spoke, who says that they didn't get feedback from a Secretary of Parliament yesterday. Really? I mean, like that happens in the best of times. That they might be having problems with getting feedback from their own thing.
Okay.
The best, and in the majority of instances, we suspect that we indicated that we've met already, as various committees, in fact, have done so, but we ourselves as presiding officers to provide guidelines at the provincial as well as at the national level. We had a joint, what we call the speakers forum. In other words, to talk about how we approach oversight in these current conditions. And this is what we agreed to do, that we received reports, for example, from each of the legislatures about preparations that they are undertaking to be able to interact with the executives, but also with the campaign on the ground to ensure that we reach as many people as possible to stay at home, sanitize, and so on and so on. Yeah.
And that's Zinori, is it not true that even though you may have the president who would call on SANDF members or SAPS members to behave in a certain way, that that does not necessarily mean that Parliament's role as an oversight constitutional functionary still has to play its particular role as the voice of the people as well?
No, absolutely, you're right. This is the point I'm making, is that the president, having given instruction, this is the executive, that the implementation of that is what oversight is about. So we can only act when we receive and notice evidence, as we have seen in the media and from people who have reported to many of our members, that we can take action. This is the point I'm making. In other words, I'm saying already at the highest level, both of the executive, but also inside the defense itself, that leadership have already expressed horror. And this is what we expect them to do, but also to take further action. And we expect that to happen. Parliament is doing exactly that. Mm-hmm. In other words, the reason we adopted the rules was to facilitate that people must be able to interact with one another as committees, but also with the executives, such as we did with the health. Health has already met. Over 70 people participated in that meeting in order to receive a briefing of what's happening and to raise issues that people have about what's happening in that environment. So that is already taking place, and that there might be delays and so on is one thing, but instructions are out there. This is exactly what we are doing.
Okay, Siseko, before I go to Mkulega, are you satisfied with that?
I'm not, Elgin, because as you say, so there are two things that are I find to be an issue with the deputy speaker's response. Number one, the president is the executive, as well as the deputy minister, whom he makes reference with respect to having had addressed the public on issues, as well as having had addressed the members of the defense forces. And it's interesting because if you go to, for instance, I'll take the deputy speaker to a publication that comes out of Parliament, by the way, which is in session. And I'm looking here specifically at volume one, issue number 9 of 2020, where one of the parliamentarians mentioned on page 2 that it doesn't bode well for the function of the House, which is the National Parliament or National Assembly, which is enshrined in the Constitution, that the issues of national significance are discussed in the press before the oversight arm of the state has had an opportunity to engage the plans of the executive. So while I appreciate, indeed, that the president and the deputy minister, members of the executive, are playing their function to sort of, I suppose, guide the defense, the defense structures in the country. I do believe, and I think the deputy speaker respectfully misquoted me there. I did not say that I didn't get in touch with the speaker of parliament or with the secretary of parliament. I was trying to get in touch with the committee secretaries yesterday to try and find out whether they would be functioning. And in many instances, Parliament, the South African Parliament or National Assembly frames itself as the people's parliament, right? And as much as we understand that indeed we are unable, or these are trying times, or these are
unprecedented
waters,
yeah.
Precisely. The fact of the matter is that Parliament as an institution, as a democratic institution, needs to be accessible to South Africans, right? And in fact, I did actually get in touch with the committee secretary, who said she would get back to me, and never did, right? So how do we make sure, as the deputy speaker was suggesting, how do they make sure as the sort of heads of these institutions, that they keep individuals who are supposed to be in those institutions functional, that they keep them connected to the South African citizenry and to the populace, and that they keep accountable in many respects, Elgin.
Yeah, and Deputy Speaker, I think this is in relation to the function as well as the duties of MPs around constituency work. And during this particular period, how do I, for instance, get in touch with an MP who is assigned to my constituency?
Yes. Sort of information is supposed to be available on our website. In other words, the contact details, these are available there, especially also through the secretaries of parliament, who, of course, we will take it up.
Ones who didn't respond.
Yes. No. You see, once we get to know that is what happened, then we can act and inquire why it happened. But let me correct a misconception.
Yeah.
What the gentleman reads about in session, it is under ordinary circumstances. In other words, they are saying the executive should not be saying to the public what they have not said to the Parliament. And ideally, that is what happens. But we've given the executive the mandate that they must add in events to implement what is, for example, in the Disaster Management Act. When there's a disaster, and we raise this debate, when there's a disaster, that becomes the priority which we would like to see the executive taking action on, and then account to Parliament.
Yeah.
This is the procedure. Under ordinary circumstances, we can have them reporting to us first and then going to do work. But not when there's any disaster.
Yeah. So the Parliament's Standing Committee on Public Accounts, SCOPA, as you know, being chaired by Mkhuleko Hlengwa, does a lot of that work around oversight, around looking into what it is that the executive has done, also looking into the role and the decision-making that has been taken amongst SOEs as well. Mkhuleko, from your part, good morning and welcome to Power Talk, but from your part as chairperson of SCOPA, first of all, speak to us about how difficult it is, or probably easy it is, maybe, during this particular period, conducting oversight and also holding the executive to account.
Good morning, Eldrin, the listeners, Babu, Deputy Speaker, and Sesego. I think maybe let us frame it correctly, and I think we must drive home the point that we are obviously in uncharted waters, and so we have to be innovative and imaginative about how we do things. part of our oversight, for example, is putting boots on the ground, as you know, oversight visits. That's not possible during this time. You've got the problem of Bait Bridge, where 37 million rands has been spent, and that has been vandalized. Ordinarily, we would have wanted to go there and see it, but we can't do it. So there are limitations to the extent to which we can do our work, but it doesn't mean that the work cannot be done. And so I agree with the Deputy Speaker that the purposes of meetings remain a priority of Parliament, and Sego makes the same point. And the virtual capabilities and protocols which Parliament is rolling out are going to enable us as portfolio committees and standing committees to actually do our work. At the same time, of course, we are interacting with government departments and ministers and so on on questions, on issues. If something happens, if something arises, we are immediately in touch with them. Take the example of the tender in Gauteng, for example, where
the IT tender.
Yes, we were in contact with National Treasury. We received a briefing from National Treasury, and the directive went out that they should not proceed with that tender. Of course, we understand that South Africans have got an expectation that everything must be done, but also at the same time, we need to be realistic. And so we need to prioritize the things which at this point in time are related to COVID-19, but also at the same time, where there are urgent matters, of course, which are happening in real time, we must intervene. So for us, the issue of SAA is one such matter. And so we are going to be making an application to the House Chairperson for Committees and the Speaker for us to be able to have that meeting to deal with those issues. We'll be talking to National Treasury to be dealing with the issues of deviations, because there's an abuse of that now. Everybody is deviating for everything unnecessarily. So I think that the directive which has been given to portfolio committees and standing committees is that prioritize the issues which are urgent. And it doesn't mean that when we know this phase passes, that we're not going to go back to issues. I mean, for example, SCOPA, we've got a huge portfolio of work in so far as ESCOM is concerned, and that will be a key focus. We are dealing with it now, but some of the things require far more rigorous interaction, which the virtual capabilities may not be able to provide for. So it's a learning curve for all of us. I must admit, it's a learning curve, and we are finding our feet as we go. But also at the same time, this is something which was unexpected. And of course, the lockdown is being extended. There's restriction to movement and so on. Because in as much as MPs, in my view, have been declared as essential services and so on, but also at the same time, we need to be careful about what that means. It does not give us a blanket approach to be everywhere and doing all sorts of things, because the message is consistent. The lockdown is for the purposes of flattening the curve. So we are all finding our feet, but what I'm adamant about is that it does not mean that work cannot be done now. And I think that portfolio committees are applying themselves at the very least. I know SCOPA's doing so. I know that COCTA, which we work with very closely as well, was due to have a virtual meeting with the Minister of COCTA. And I think that over time, Parliament has now recognized the need to build up its capabilities. And this, of course, will enable us, even post-corona, Eldrin, to be able to deal with the issue of the two capitals. It's clear now that certain meetings with government departments and entities can be held using the technology. We do not need to fly delegations all the way down to Cape Town and save money of the fiscus whilst that issue is being dealt with. So there's best practice that we must actually take out of this to say, how do we sustain the use of technology, but also at the same time not compromise on the issues of oversight and accountability. And that's what needs to happen. So as far as I'm concerned, the what Parliament is providing, of course, in tranches and in phases, must be rolled out for all of us. And I think that work is being done.
Okay, Siseko, what's your take on this? And just listening into what Nkuleko was saying about, of course, MPs being declared as part of an essential service that they are providing, that doesn't necessarily mean that there is a blanket approach in trying to do everything else that MPs have been doing. But I would imagine that for the mere fact that you are an essential service, that means that there's more responsibility placed on you than anybody else.
Thanks, Elgin. So on that particular matter, I think I'm inclined to agree with Nkuleko in the sense of, this we cannot expect MPs to be everywhere, yeah. Right? They're not the Holy Ghost kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, my objection to this, and again, I'm an academic, so maybe I'm just being too theoretical about these things,
mm-hmm.
But my only objection to that is, number one, how do we ensure, again, because I'm focused on the end goal here. Yes, coronavirus is a problem that we're dealing with in South Africa, and
yep.
We need to mitigate it, and we need to flatten the curve. And I'm absolutely in agreement with all of that. However, the challenge or the chat is shifting a bit in terms of how the epidemiologists are seeing it, which is to say, actually, we maybe need to put in place mechanisms that allow us to reduce the infection rates. But anyway, that's not the conversation.
Yep.
So I'm asking the question of how do we, as the South African citizenry, in light of this end of this end prize, which is maintaining democratic principles in South Africa, how do we communicate with our parliamentarians, right, in this time? How do we make sure, as a South African sitting in Pretoria, for instance, how do I make sure that I am in conversation with my MP right now?
Yeah.
How does my MP, who represents my interest as a South African, make sure that my concerns, my fears, my challenges are addressed in the various standing committees, joint standing committees, portfolio committees? So while I am aware that MPs,
yes.
for instance, cannot be on the ground right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do I make sure? What assurances do I have? Because I think that's the main thing.
Yeah.
That a lot of us want at this moment.
Let me just quickly get Nkuleko to respond to them. Nkuleko, we've got about a minute or so to go to the news headlines, but just an opening remarks around this particular issue, and then we'll come back to it again. How do you, as an MP, for instance, remain in touch with your constituency, and also taking into consideration the rules that are coming into place? Who plays the role around interrogating the rules and the impact that those rules and regulations will have on the ordinary citizens? That's what we're seeing now, that some of the rules are being amended. But had Parliament been in session, had MPs, for instance, been in session, and MPs been in touch with their constituents, they would have known that these would have a negative impact. For instance, the guy who has a tuck shop being told not to operate anymore, that this will have a negative impact on that person. So you've got a minute, and then we're going to go to Power News headlines.
Well, my understanding and my genuine assumption is that a constituency-based MP should not only be available during coronavirus.
Yes. So
if you are not in touch with your MP prior corona, I'm not sure how you can be in touch with them now. I drive home the point. MPs must be available and accessible.
Mm.
They must be available on their phones. They must be available via email. They must be available via WhatsApp. And they must legitimately, if called upon to come onto such platforms as yours, Eldrin, and all your other media counterparts, be readily available to do so. And I think the Deputy Speaker is making the commitment to follow up on where they have been comebacks to issues that have been raised with them. And I think maybe at the end of the show, I don't have a problem, I can give out my details.
Okay.
But all I'm saying is that MPs, as far as I see it, understand that they should be available. If they're not, then that's a matter that should be taken up with the different MPs and the different parties, because political parties must also crack the whip on their representatives
to make
sure that they are available.
Let's quickly go to Power News headlines. When we come back, we'll be taking your calls on 0861-987-000, your tweets at Alderan Simpia, hashtag Power Talk, and also you can tweet at Power FM 987. And we're still in conversation with the Deputy Speaker of the National Assembly, Lichisa Tenodi, as well as Siseko Khumalo, Editor of Journal of Decolonizing Disciplines, and Mkulego Hlenga, who is the SCOPA Chairperson. So 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Simpier, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. So Mkulego, just to go back to the point that was raised earlier on, for me as well, is, for instance, right now there's a debate around whether to relax some of the regulations or not. And I find that the voices of MPs, specifically MPs, not necessarily speaking about political parties themselves, but the MPs, those who are represented in Parliament, those who've been elected to represent us in Parliament, you're not really hearing from them what their take is on the debate and the discourse currently ongoing around, do we extend the lockdown? Do we relax some of the laws or not?
Well, it's the provisions of the Disaster Management Act, Eldrin, which have given us this. And if there is conflict, we'll probably have to look at that post this time to tighten up the mechanisms of the checks and balances. But of course, the assumption also is that in a disaster, you're not operating within normality. You need to move with the necessary speed and have the agility to be able to take decisions. Mm. Of course, where there are issues of conflict, then I believe that we must be able to, intervene in that regard. I mean, the issue of the cooked food, for example, yeah. For me, I found it to be a very arbitrary kind of intervention. You've got police officers who are working. They want to go and buy food. Where do they, you know? So I think some of the regulations may not have been thought out through properly, and they may have had a very myopic view. But the second point is that I'm aware that there have been consultations with the leaders of political parties represented in Parliament as part of the ongoing communication. But I if there's concern, then of course I think the presiding officers, the deputy speakers here, will note that as well, and the Chief Whips Forum must take that matter up as part of the interactions with the leader of government business. And I think finally, though, the issue is that MPs must be available, they must be accessible, and when the portfolio committees are scheduled to meet, they must be feeding that information into their own systems to be able to discuss that. So I just think, as I was saying, that this being a learning curve for everybody, it may be that there will be lapses in terms of how things are done, but I doubt that there's no will for the work to be done.
Yeah, but I also think that as we're saying that this is something new, unprecedented, uncharted waters, this particular process and this conversations that we are having as well is actually trying to highlight some of those blind spots that may be there. Siseko, just a quick one in response to what Mkulego was speaking about right now.
So I would say that what we have in terms of the discourse, both with regards to oversight arms such as Parliament, etc., I'm a bit concerned, Elton, by the ways in which we are being given sort of a catch-22 kind of scenario, right, where we're being told we're working under certain conditions, we have to prioritize particular things. This, in many respects, goes back to a philosophy 101 problem that we teach our students at first year level, which is to say, in terms of ethics, right, how do we weigh up these particular problems? And I think in terms of democratic institutions, checks and balances, we shouldn't be cajoled into this idea that we have to, that we have to suspend particular matters and prioritize others. I think that's really, really an intellectually weak move. And I think that in terms of issues like these, especially when we are faced with disaster, we need to be innovative in terms of our leadership, both at government executive level, as well as in the parliamentary structures, et cetera. And we need to think quite sufficiently in terms of, because at the end of the day, when you think about specifically this regulation around the cooked food issue, those regulations, if you remember, Aldrin, I had called in a couple of weeks ago to suggest that in the state of Israel in 1948, they had issued out something to the extent of pudding regulations, right? How to make pudding in 1948, regulations that were only repealed in 2011. And I think for me that if we are, if we take those particular moves that give us these apparent tensions and these false dichotomies, we might find ourselves jeopardizing our institutions, and we might find ourselves jeopardizing the project of democracy. And for me, that is what is most concerning, is to say we've got to think in a much more broad-based kind of way, and we've got to be able to hold these competing and even contradictory interests in tandem, right? Yeah. And for me, that is leadership.
Yeah. Deputy Speaker, before we go to the power line, the issue around even within the discourse and the input by members of parliament, don't you, as the National Assembly, find that there is a lapse in that you don't really see MPs playing a pivotal role around the input, around the rules and regulations that are being put in place as well? And considering that you have the different committees that are in place, and they also have their own researchers that are there, so all that work, what's being done with that work? What's being done with some of the findings, for instance, that the researchers are coming up with? Sisekwa speaks about what has happened in Israel. Are those some of the things that are being considered by those who are part of the NCC, for instance?
This matter about thinking in an emergency is an old one and has been debated before. And of course, when a disaster strikes, the law is there. It has provisions for preventative action, and it has provisions for what must take place immediately and in the long term. But in the process of acting out, there was acknowledgement that mistakes are going to be committed. Yep. And feedback, obviously, from Parliament is a critical one. So the manner in which we do that, in other words, how do we give feedback to the executive that this matter is coming up? For example, when we met as the Speaker's Forum, in other words, Parliament in the nine provinces, there was a recommendation about certain economic proposals. Mm. And we said, we can't, there's an opportunity now to communicate directly to the Command Council that these are our observations on the ground, and we would like some of these things to be addressed. And in the meetings that have taken place between, for example, health and others, specific references arising from meetings of committees to communicate to the Council and what needs to be done is being carried out. In other words, it is happening. These things are being done as happens. Ordinarily, you would have heard it in a committee meeting, okay? Which you are not hearing because yes, it is happening differently. Now, only those who, for example, would have been part of the discussion about the rules and what should be allowed and the economic impact and social impact. I listened to an interesting debate about a response by the people who organize themselves as economists and others on the nature of those rules and publicly and so on. Ordinarily, they would send those to Parliament and say, look, this is our view and so on, and we would like this to be communicated. I, on my own as an MP, felt that it is appropriate that I participate in there so that I communicate what I hear is emerging to the people who are ultimately going to draw those rules, but we can't do it in a manner that ordinarily happens. In other words, slowly, in the normal way in which we do it in Parliament. Over time, in committees, even online, we will be able to do such things, to produce evidence of our discussion, yep, of the specifics so that we communicate them.
Is there any indication whether the public will be able to access some of those committee sittings yes, and the meetings, yes, that are happening via Zoom? Will the links,
yes,
be made
absolutely
available?
Yes. In fact, what we said, even there were people, the public, some people participated in the meeting on health already. Mm-hmm. When we held a subsequent press conference online, we did say that, yes, the public is going to be invited, okay, has to be invited. It's a requirement, in fact. We cannot involve the public in the work of Parliament and committees and so on. There's no way we can exclude,
okay,
the public.
So let's go, yeah, to the public line on zero. The public line, the power line on 0861 987 000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Sumpia, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. Advocate Mantula, good morning.
Mofrika, thank you. Actually, you were reading my line in terms of public engagement, and I think the Deputy Speaker has covered that, which it is key, Sumpia. But let me raise the three grey areas that I've just picked up in terms of the role of Parliament, yep. which we have to first acknowledge that President has already informed Parliament, which is a very good move, first to inform Parliament. But second, listen, P, where you look, I mean, Aldrin, you look at the Act, it gives the Minister of Culture to report to Parliament annually. And in this instance, now, they should be trying to look at the exception rule to say, can the minister still report? Because we have these committees that must report consistently and constantly in terms of their reports, like health, police, defense, trade and industry, as well as arts and culture. And the final, listen, you will understand, this report, if you look at COCTA site, in their website, the last report that was being sent in that site, it was in 2014 and 2015, meaning again our reporting and our engagement on national issues of this nature are lacking in terms of Parliament not playing their oversight role, because they have been given essential role, by the way. They are the essential workers as well. And the issue of traveling, yes, they are caught up in terms of inter-province traveling. But they must use the means of radio stations like of this to have the People's Parliament, where we hold them accountable of the mismanagement that you are seeing, Aldrin, of the food parcels, of the police conduct, and as well as to look at the ICT tenders that were moving in the epicenter, which is Gauteng. So those are the key issues, Aldrin. I'm saying when Parliament has to look at their role, they should look at the past as well as compared with the current crisis. Yeah.
Okay, Mkhuleko, what do you think about that idea of using radio stations? I know that you mentioned in terms of access to MPs that we can use the radio platform, but just having a People's Parliament that happens via the radio that is streamed live.
Well, I think we can test all the possible avenues for the purposes of finding the best model for this. And if radio stations are one, then we must develop the modalities around that so that it actually fulfills its objective. Because what we mustn't do is to, and this is where I differ, I would say, with that, and I would have been interested to know what are these issues that it's talking about so that we can take them up. What are the issues specifically? Because I maintain we are not able to do everything that we ordinarily would be doing. We all need to be focused on the disaster. We all need to focus our attention on making sure that we push back on the frontiers of the challenges before us. And it does not mean that the work will not be done. All the issues will still be raised. So I think let's speak in specific terms, and that's why I was saying there was the issue of the ICT tender.
Yeah.
It was raised, we dealt with it immediately so that we could be able to make sure that the system is not abused. Of course, this is going to cause a discomfort, Eldrin, to South Africans, and the inconveniences are huge. And for South Africans, I'm a rural boy from the south coast of KwaZulu-Natal, and I can tell you the negative impact that this has on people. I'm not ignorant to those realities.
Mm-hmm.
So we also need to make sure, Guti, whatever is ideal, we temper it with what is real and practical. The final point I want to make is that we are going to be having meetings, and as the Deputy Speaker said, we will be. And the meetings are public, so if you want to plug into them, that will be available, as we ordinarily would be doing with any meeting that we have in Parliament, which is public. And as I'm saying, the issue that the caller just raised now, the advocate, one of them is the issue of the abuses of the deviations and the expansion. And we want to engage with National Treasury as a matter of urgency. Secondly, the Department of Social Development is going to have to deal with the abuse of the food parcels. You've got food parcels which, if you go to the shop, they'll cost you 300 rands, but they're already going for 1,200 from the service providers which have been sourced. So all those things specifically, we need to deal with them. And if it means suspending those kind of procurements to make sure Uguti, the state, doesn't bleed money, then we do so. Eldrin, it was Scopa even at the outset of the lockdown and the declaration of the disaster, which raised the issue, the concern to say, look, the system is going to be abused, and we began a process of interacting with National Treasury. There's the issues of the Treasury notes and the guidelines which departments have been reminded of to say, and already we are seeing what they are not adhering to that, and hence the intervention to say, let us now deal with this. So what I'm saying is that there's definitely no excuse for the work not to be done. The work that is urgent, the work that is priority must be done, and it does not mean that all the work will not be done. It's just that we have to rearrange our program and scheduling to make sure that we respond to the challenges of our people. And I'm calling on South Africans to track down their MPs on one hand, but also at the same time for MPs to be readily available to their constituents to make sure that they are the conveyor belt upon which information flows, so that people can be able to have a linkage. Finally, Eldrin, it's not just MPs. There's provincial legislatures and municipal councils.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that we are giving full support also to the local structure of government, which I fundamentally believe is at the coalface of this disaster, because that is the first point of entry for people. So there needs to be broader collaborative efforts and working relationships of MPs and councillors of reaching out and being readily available to South Africans. Because I believe if you can go out and distribute a food parcel, equally then you must be able to go out to respond to challenges where people are. So that's how this needs to be done. And I fundamentally believe that there are serious lessons to be learned from this, the serious reflections that need to be made on the Disaster Management Act to tighten it up and to make sure that Parliament is given the kind of constitutional leverage and agility to be part and parcel of the decision-making process.
Okay, where would you say the lapse is there currently?
Well, the lapse is that, I mean, the regulations, I don't think they are adequately canvassed and adequately discussed, because I think, just to use the one of the cooked food, for example, and I consider it to be a very arbitrary regulation, because it grinds against the grain of your essential service workers, for example, who are out in the field, your police officers, your metro cops, your nurses moving in between hospitals and home and so on. Where do they eat and so on? So you say no cooked food, but you want them at work during the break. What happens? So there's certain considerations and classifications. What is cooked food? So manja makwinya of the spaza shop down the road cannot be sold, but at the same time, we are saying let us support that local franchising. So there does need to be checks and balances in the declaration of it, and it's at the very heart of that is making sure that we deal with the Disaster Management Act to give Parliament its necessary leverage. So the lapses are there and they must be done.
What about, just quickly before I go to Seko as well as Ntate Lichisa Tsonodi, what about the idea that is being used, I think it's New Zealand if I'm not mistaken, where there is one oversight committee that has been set up that does the oversight work in terms of COVID-19 and the role that the executive plays, and probably through a committee of that nature, that committee could sit also at the NCC?
Well, that is a suggestion that can be dealt with. I think that what is more practical is to ensure that committees are meeting virtually to make sure that they are able to continue with their specialization in the work that they are doing. And I mean, there was the point about Israel that was made earlier on.
Yeah.
But some 2-3 weeks ago in Israel, the prime minister was the only one present in parliament, with the speaker and the sergeant at arms, and the members of parliament were not there. So let's also look at how parliaments around the world are working and borrow best practice. But I genuinely believe that let us build up the capabilities of the portfolio committees and ensure that they are meeting so that they are targeted in the approach. For example, the Department of Public Works must appear before the portfolio committee, and it must be a virtual meeting to explain the circumstances of Baitbridge, and Rio Scopa will partner with them to do that, to make sure the oversight and accountability is done. At the end, of course, I'll give out my details as part of ensuring that if citizens have got an issue, they can contact us and we can direct them accordingly to the relevant government departments and entities.
Okay. Siseko, just quickly, that idea of having at least one single oversight committee that will be able to sit part of the NCC, because what they've done in this particular country, can't remember now whether it's New Zealand I can't remember which particular country, but anyway, it is, the committee is set up, and in the majority, the committee is made up of opposition party members, and the governing party is in the minority represented in that committee.
You know, I think that's a difficult one for me, because of the way in which the South African system works with proportional representation kind of thing. Although I would say that that would be a good check and balancing mechanism, I don't know how appetizing that would be in terms of the broader framework that we have in the South African context, right? And Ngifisa Zhukuthi ngivumelane noMfoka Hlengwa on this particular issue of strengthening parliament, and he asks specifically for specifics with respect to what are the issues that need to be addressed. Mfoka Hlengwa, I would suggest that in terms of the specifics, I'm looking at number one, when we're looking at the Disaster Management Act, which has been put into effect right now, how do we relax and repeal this particular situation? How do we get the SANDF off our streets? How do we, because in many instances, what I'm looking at is, as I say, the end goal at the end of the day in terms of democracy. How do we get back to normalcy at the end of this particular situation and crisis? Because in many respects, what is always the case, and I'm not necessarily bashing the state here or government, but there's always another crisis that is looming on the horizon. And okay, I think that's why I'm saying we can get Vumelana Nohlengwa to say that what we need to do is that we need to strengthen our oversight institutions, i.e. Parliament. And how do we do that? How do we capacitate that? That becomes the project in which we need to be invested with regards to our thinking. So on the issue of the oversight committee that is majority constituted by opposition parties, Aldrin, in terms of the South African election system, I'm not too certain how that might work and how appetizing it might be for the state and for government. But maybe it's something that we should look into, again, in terms of necessarily strengthening the oversight institutions in the country.
And remember also, it's also about, we're speaking about uncharted water, uncharted territories that we are now in. We've never experienced this before. It's unprecedented. So maybe, just maybe, something of this nature could work. I wonder what's your take on this, Deputy Speaker?
Well, I think The disaster management does not suspend the constitution.
Yes.
Yeah. What we should do is to ensure that the executive plays the role as prescribed by the constitution, that we as the oversight, responsible for oversight, must play that role. If we now act together in a committee such as you suggest, it becomes a problem, because then we would be both responsible for those things, and how do we then have oversight over it? It would create that difficulty. Secondly, the reason we did not choose to have an ad hoc committee is that we prefer that every relevant committee and its members must be engaged with this matter.
But how do you determine which committee is a relevant committee? Because Siseko, for instance, makes the example of intelligence and defense. Those are the executive functionaries are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing in terms of the constitution. But who's playing an oversight there?
No, look, let's put it this way. For example, this matter, the declaration of the disaster has to be reported to parliament. It was.
Yeah.
And that, declaration has been submitted to the Joint Committee on Defense to look at, so that it makes the assessment that will inform Parliament about the continuation and or otherwise of this matter, based on evidence that will emerge from the public and its indication.
Okay.
Right now, there's an initial assessment of which committees would be appropriate. Now, this is not something that you could have been au fait with, so that you place criteria with which you would do that. It's practical.
Okay.
For example, I responded to seven NGOs and organizations that were concerned about whether there is oversight about the defense and police wrong activities, and said they were wondering why the committee was not mentioned at the beginning. And we realized that they were not aware that, in fact, as we pick up work on the ground, that thing was added. So they could not worry. They are now going to be interacting with the chairperson of the committee to be able to do that.
Okay. Deputy Speaker, unfortunately, we've run out of time. I'm going to ask Mkulego to quickly share those details with us. And Mkulego, as you share those details, just speaking from a level of being a spokesperson of the IFP, what we're seeing with the Red Ends and the Red Ends evicting people?
Well, I was in touch with the MMC yesterday, responsible for housing, who's an IFP representative in the city of Johannesburg, and he advised that the decision or the implementation of those removals did not come from his office. They came from the office of the mayor, and they were implemented at that level. So it is not a decision which was informed by the IFP. My suggestion is that you speak to the mayor or the office of the mayor. They have got the full details, and the MMC is interacting with them to understand further what is going on, and will then probably be in a position to comment on the issue. We are looking at it, and we are concerned about it, and we will make sure that a logical legal conclusion is arrived at as a matter of urgency. Those who are looking for SCOPA, they can send their emails to myself at mhlengwa@parliament.gov.za or the committee secretary nkabinde@parliament.gov.za or bkali@parliament.gov.za or reach me via a phone on 071-111-0539. It's SMS, WhatsApp, or calls 071-111-0539, and then we'll do the best we can to make sure that we link them up to the relevant direction in which they're looking at. But I think let's all appreciate that it's the best of times, it's the worst of times, and we will emerge out of this stronger and wiser with the lessons we'll learn.
Thank you so much for that. Mkulego Hlengwa, SCOPA Chairperson, Litshisa Tonori, Deputy Speaker of the National Assembly, as well as Siseko Khumalo, Editor of the Journal of Decolonizing Disciplines.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.